Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before.
I don't have my sheet. Helpless about that. You can't handle justice. Thank you. Okay, first case for oral argument this morning is James Tozzer, appellant versus James and Rosemary. No, that's yesterday. Okay, well, there it is. Okay, well, backing up. This being Wednesday, the first case for oral argument is Natty Mac Capital, appellant versus, and there are several respondents listed. Which one do you represent?
Represents Getty Abstract Title Company, First Dakota National Bank, and Brick and Mortar
Investment. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Those would be the appellees, and for the appellant, Mr. Michael Tobin, an attorney from Sioux Falls, and for the appellee respondents is Mr. Sandra Moorhead, an attorney also from Sioux Falls. Mr. Tobin, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Michael Tobin from the Boyce Greenfield firm in Sioux Falls, and I represent Natty Mac Capital LLC in this appeal. There are two issues before this court today on this appeal. The first issue concerns the validity of a satisfaction of mortgage that was not signed by the mortgagee of record. The circuit court, despite the clear language of SDCL 44-8-14 and SDCL 44-8-6, concluded that the satisfaction was valid, that it did serve to discharge the mortgage, and granted the defendant's motion for summary judgment. Because there are genuine issues of material fact, Natty Mac Capital respectfully requests that this court reverse that decision. The second issue focuses upon the closing agent, Rita Barforth at Getty Abstract and Title, and her negligence in accepting, relying upon, and then filing the satisfaction of mortgage that was not signed by the mortgagee of record. The circuit court, despite the clear foreseeability of harm that the acceptance, reliance, and filing of a satisfaction that was not signed by the mortgagee of record could cause, rejected Natty Mac's claims of negligence and granted the defendant's motion for summary judgment.
Now, Natty Mac. The original mortgage was to Natty Mac, though, correct?
Your Honor, Natty Mac, the original mortgage was signed by MERS, the Mortgage Electronic Registration System. It was MERS was the mortgagee under that mortgage. On that document, ACT, who everybody concedes is the primary bad actor in this matter, ACT was noted as the lender. I'm not overly well versed in the inner sanctum of the mortgage industry, but I believe that ACT initially funded the mortgage, and then in turn, at the same time in connection with other transactions, sold that mortgage and that note to my client, Natty Mac Capital.
So there was no assignment filed to record. It was noted in the original mortgage, in essence.
Correct. Correct. There was never an assignment to the mortgage from anyone to anyone throughout the entirety of this matter.
But as I understand, ACT was still authorized to accept payment on the mortgage, accept the mortgage payments.
Correct. There is a contractual relationship between ACT and my client, Natty Mac, where ACT would serve as the servicer of the loan under the MERS system. And one of the obligations that ACT could perform was to receive payment either in full or the monthly payments that all of us have to make.
So ACT accepts, is authorized to accept payment and does accept payment and grants a satisfaction, and it's not the mortgagee. But, you know, I guess what I'm stuck here is I keep having this simple image in my head. If I go to the bank and I say I want to pay off my mortgage and I hand a check to the teller and say, here's my mortgage, I'm paying it off, and the teller takes it and puts it in his pocket instead of giving it to his employer. You're saying, if I understand you correctly, that I'm still not entitled to a satisfaction of my mortgage, even though I've followed everything I can do in order to satisfy my mortgage.
And, Your Honor, I and Natty Mac Capital would agree with your point. The PESICs, the homeowners in this matter, they are completely innocent. They are a true innocent bystander in a snafu and in a breakdown of the overarching MERS mortgage industry system. My client currently is not seeking any monetary relief from the PESICs whatsoever. My client started this action merely as one for declaratory relief, naming the PESICs and their lender, First Dakota, for a judicial determination as to whether the satisfaction is valid.
Well, who should be paying the bill then if your client is not holding the bag, if you will, at the end? Or the abstract company, or who? If you don't,
correct. We're not to that point, but I believe that if the satisfaction is determined to be invalid, then I think it's either going to be the title insurance company for the PESICs in First Dakota who may have to pay. I don't know that. We're not to that point. The errors and omissions carrier for the closing agent may also have to pay, or it may fall on First Dakota. But I don't believe that the PESICs themselves will ever have to pay any money.
If this had been an injunction action instead of another action, couldn't a court validly say that as a matter of law that mortgage has to be satisfied by somebody because the PESICs paid off their loan? They paid it. They did everything the law required them to do, and they gave it to Natty Mac's servicing agent, ACT. So wouldn't we be in the same position if this were an injunction action? The court would still have to say, you know, the mortgage has to be satisfied.
Your Honor, again, I share your concern with the innocence of the PESICs. Nobody ascribes to them anything that went wrong. They did what they were supposed to, as did their lender, First Dakota. They paid the amount of money to pay off the note and the mortgage, and then errors were made by others. And that is what this appeal is about. As I indicated, we currently have no action against the PESICs that ever seeks to take money out of their pocket. We do believe that it will be either the E&O carrier for the title agent or potentially the title insurance that will end up paying.
But those are only contingencies. The bottom line is that you're asking us to declare that mortgage, the satisfaction, invalid. So if those contingencies never get worked out, the PESICs still end up, or the home still ends up with a mortgage on it that's been paid off.
I will have to respectfully disagree that it has been paid off. They paid money, and I know they were trying to pay it off. But we don't believe that...
They pay the same analogy. My analogy is imperfect, I know, but it's the same thing. They hand it to the teller. And the bank says, you go to the window and you pay the teller. They paid the teller, in effect. And you're saying, nope, we're still not satisfied.
And in that instance, and I believe in this instance as well, Your Honor, the satisfaction and that mortgage may still have to remain attached to the property. But do the PESICs or the person at the teller window in your example, do they have remedies available to them? Sure. One of them would be against the bank teller and the bank for their wrongful or negligent conduct and how they handled that. I don't believe the customer in your example or the PESICs in this case will ever end up being the entity or the person that has to pay.
But, Mr. Tobin, I'm not sure, going at it another way, I'm not sure where your damage is. Because the note is the obligation, and that was paid. It was paid in full, according to the documents we have and that were in the motion before Judge T. The motion or the note was paid to the authorized agent from Natty Mac. The mortgage is just a security and an instrument of that. Once that note is paid under our case law, isn't the obligation gone?
Well, two critical...
Where are your damages?
Two responses. One, I respectfully take issue that ACT was our designated agent. We believe there are genuine issues of material fact as to that. First, the very document that purports to establish the agency, as argued by the appellees, states that they're independent contractors. That statement in and of itself, we believe, raises a genuine issue of material fact as to the agency. Second, the scope of the agent's authority is also a fact-intensive issue. And here, the same document, section 4.01, also states that that ACT is to follow all applicable law. Here, ACT violated, we would say, various different laws.
I thought you just said, though, a minute ago, that ACT was authorized, could accept the money on behalf of Nannymax.
Correct. Under the agreement, ACT has the authority and the power to accept the money.
Okay, so why is that a genuine issue of material fact then?
Well, it goes to the existence of the agency, but more importantly for your question is the scope of that agency. Merely because there's a contractual relationship between the parties, I'm not going to go so far as to say that ipso facto creates an agency.
Doesn't it say right in the face of the mortgage that they're authorized to accept the payment? Can't Getty rely on that? Are you trying to walk away from your document?
No, I don't believe we are. In fact, we're trying to enforce the document as it is written. And that is the point. Getty knew. Their agent, the affidavit is in the record. She testified in her affidavit. She had the actual mortgage in her possession. That mortgage expressly states that MERS is the mortgagee of record. It states that in bold font. Despite her knowing that, she contacts MERS. Fine. They send her to ACT. Inexplicably, and without any further inquiry, she then sends the payoff to ACT and receives and files a satisfaction signed by ACT when she knew that was not the mortgagee of record. And that, to me, Your Honor, is the ultimate, one of the ultimate issues in this case. Is it excusable? Is it allowable for a closing agent to try to follow this MERS system versus following what South Dakota law requires? This closing agent knew who the mortgagee of record was.
She testified to that on the record? Or are you just assuming because she had the document she knew it?
Well, I'm assuming because she had the document that she knew. It says it right on there.
Mr. Tobin, you're saying mortgagee, and you're almost equating the mortgagee as the person who owed the money. MERS wasn't owed a cent.
I would agree with you, Your Honor.
The money follows the note, and the note was paid to the person who was designated as authorized to receive the payment. It was paid in full. Isn't that correct?
Correct. Correct. There's no dispute that Getty, on behalf of the Pestics and the bank, transferred and paid the money to ACT.
So where's your damage? Well, off in full.
The damage on the one extreme is the fact that my client in turn never got the money. Now,
well, your client is MERS. They're not entitled to the money. Or no, your client is...
My client is Nannymax. They're the ones who are currently holding the empty bag. They never received their money. They've never been paid in full. Now, as I started, we certainly concede that ACT is the primary bad actor here. Nobody disputes that. And this isn't in the record, but I can assure you that efforts were taken in the state of Florida to try to run that down and get to the bottom of that. We concede ACT is the primary bad actor. We're saying two different things. Number one, was this satisfaction valid? And under SDCL 44.814, we do not believe it is. That statute requires that the mortgagee sign the satisfaction. That was not done.
What about the cases that say it doesn't matter if the satisfaction was properly executed? It doesn't even matter if the debt's paid off. You don't have to correctly note satisfaction. You know, there's a lot of cases that say that.
Well, Your Honor, the only cases that I've seen were those cited by the defendant, the appellees, and I think it's important to note that those cases are from other jurisdictions, and they all come from before 1939.
Yeah, but we've had recording statutes that dictate how you do a satisfaction and how you do an assignment and how you do a mortgage from the very beginning. I mean, these recording statutes aren't new after the 1930s. They've been there way before that. And this is a recording statute, is it not?
Correct. Correct. The statute that's currently in effect went into effect in 1939, and I think that's of importance because that postdates these other cases cited by the defendants that talk about mere payment discharges the mortgage without having to have it filed. Our statute requires that the satisfaction be filed and that it be signed by the mortgagee of record. And nobody disputes in this case that those things did not happen. Now, I can concede that it has the potential to leave a bad taste in the mouth, but in this instance, the legislature has spoken. It has spoken clearly, and that statute has been in effect for more than 80 years, that it must be filed and that it must be signed by the mortgagee of record. And I would respectfully submit to you that the reason for that is that it promotes consistency and constancy in real estate transactions and in that whole entire industry. If the document is filed, first of all, and then signed by the right party, the world is on notice, and we all then have confidence in relying upon that document. In this instance,
it was actually signed by the right party, but he had a different title that he signed it by. Isn't that the situation?
Well, I acknowledge your point, and I don't want to engage in a game of semantics. The individual who signed it had multiple different roles. He didn't sign it in the correct role. I would agree with you there.
But he did have authority to sign it if he just put the different title on it.
He would have needed to have signed it in the correct capacity. That's not the only error. The satisfaction also lists ACT as the original mortgagee. The error is not simple. Let me start over. I don't think the error is just that the gentleman who signed it just made a little mental mistake. In the typed written portion of the satisfaction, the error is replete. I mean, it talks about ACT being the original mortgagee under the note. So it was...
They may not have been the mortgagee, but they were the original lender who the obligation was owed to under the note.
Correct. They initially funded the purchase, and then that in turn was immediately sold to my client, Natty Mac.
Well, you know, this wasn't briefed extensively. In fact, I don't think much at all. But the mortgage says that MERS is the mortgagee as nominee for the lender, which in this case is ACT. And ACT signed the satisfaction. So right on the mortgage it says that MERS is only the nominee mortgagee for ACT. And ACT signed. ACT signed the satisfaction.
And, Your Honor, I of course agree that is exactly what the mortgage says. But I don't believe that then obviates the need for the right party to sign the satisfaction. Because if that is allowed, we are then going to be inviting the potential for some confusion to be entering a system where we don't want confusion. And that's why...
What does that mean if you're the nominee for the lender? Don't we have to give some effect to that language?
Sure, I would agree. We don't want to read surplusage into the document. But I believe that by listing itself as nominee, my interpretation of that is that it was telling, whether it's the closing agent or the world at large, that MERS is not the funder of this loan. That MERS is going to be holding this mortgage in a nominee fashion, in an empty fashion. They're doing it for reasons other than funding the loan. But I still believe that it has to be signed by the appropriate party. And in fact, MERS admits as much in these frequently asked questions that the defendants cite in their brief, and it's included in the appendix. MERS actually has this scenario as one of the examples. And in doing so, MERS actually says that in this exact instance, if the servicer, ACT, signs it the satisfaction in their own name as opposed to MERS's name, MERS even acknowledges that the satisfaction is not valid and that the recorder, the register of deeds, should reject it.
Let me ask you one more question before you run out of time. You know, this is a recording statute. These statutes are intended to give notice to third parties about, you know, financial arrangements that have been made between parties. Do you really think that these two statutes were intended to govern the contractual relationship between a lender and a borrower?
Your Honor, I don't know. I don't know if they were intended to govern the relationship between a lender and a borrower. I can only surmise that they were intended to provide consistency and constancy in real estate transactions, and that system has worked in South Dakota for at least 80 years, and as you indicated, Justice Zinter, way before that even. And it does so by eliminating the possibility of what we have here, where the mortgage is signed by one party, and then the satisfaction is signed by a different one.
But you know what? Your client would have been out of the money even if Mr. Hawes had signed, instead of putting down on behalf of ACT, he put down on behalf of MERS. We'd be in this, your client would be in exactly the same position.
Your Honor, and as I indicated, under the facts of this case, when you look at it from the PESIC perspective, I agree that it can leave a bad taste in the mouth. But that doesn't excuse the fact that a statute that has been on the books for over 80 years sets forth the requirements of what it takes, and it was not followed in this instance. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Tobin. Mr. Moorhead, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Sandra Moorhead. I'm here on behalf of the defendants and the appellees, the PESICs, First Dakota National Bank, and Getty Abstract and Title. Your Honors, this case is about who had the control and who made the rules. In this case, the answer to that is Natty Mac. And while there was a breakdown, as Mr. Tobin mentioned, the breakdown was between Natty Mac and its agent, ACT. It was a breakdown in that relationship that leads us to where we are today. Circuit Court properly granted summary judgment on both of these issues. On the issue of whether this mortgage was satisfied, the Circuit Court properly recognized that when payment is made to a mortgagee or to a mortgagee's authorized agent on a debt, that satisfies the mortgage. Payment on the underlying debt satisfies the mortgage as a matter of law, without regard to how it's reported. On the issue of Getty Abstract's alleged negligence, the court properly dismissed that claim as well, recognizing that parties such as Getty Abstract performing an escrow role don't owe a duty to strangers to the escrow transaction like Natty Mac, and also, specifically, don't have an obligation to police that relationship between lenders and their loan servicers.
But they do have a duty to the PESICs, and the PESICs still have a mortgage if that gentleman is correct on their home, even though they paid it off.
Your Honor, there's a mortgage that's on the record because of this case that we have here today. We've cited numerous cases standing for the proposition that a mortgage is there for one purpose, and that's to secure the underlying obligation. And when payment is made on that underlying obligation, you're entitled to a discharge. In fact, the payment of the funds actually satisfies the mortgage as a matter of law. It disappears. And that's supported by SDCL 44-3-8. That statute provides, whenever any mortgage, pledge, or other lien of any kind has been satisfied, either by payment, foreclosure, or other legal means, the holder of the lien shall, within 30 days of satisfaction, deliver a sworn satisfaction to the debtor. What's happened in this case, Your Honor, is Natty Mac is trying to blur the distinction between satisfaction as a matter of law by payment and satisfaction of the mortgage on the record. 44-8-14, which counsels Natty Mac relies heavily upon, says a recorded mortgage may be discharged upon the records of the Register of Deeds by filing the document in the form prescribed by that statute. The defendants aren't here today asking the court to trump that statute with MERS's rules. What's happened here is Natty Mac is trying to trump the rule that payment of the underlying debt discharges the mortgage with a statute that's a recording statute that's intended to give notice to third parties. Your Honors, both on the record below and here today, Natty Mac has conceded that ACT was authorized to accept payment in this case. Natty Mac claims that there was no agency relationship, and yet that was the primary part of the relationship, the primary part of the lending servicing relationship, and that was to accept those payments and otherwise service the loan.
Are there issues of fact about that?
No, there aren't, Your Honor, and the reason is because the parties spelled out their relationship in an unambiguous document. The defendant's appendix at pages 60 through 66, there's the master loan agreement the parties entered. And in that agreement, ACT and Natty Mac both agreed that they were entering into this arrangement where ACT was going to be servicing the loans. And among other provisions, ACT was directed to service the loans, quote, on behalf of, close quote, Natty Mac. One of the important elements besides the assent of the parties and whether or not there's an agency relationship is control. If we look at the rest of the master loan agreement, the document is replete with examples of how Natty Mac was essentially in control of every aspect of that relationship. Natty Mac was the party that had the right to inspect ACT's files to make sure that ACT was properly servicing the loans, entitled to status reports, even went so far as to spell out what ACT was supposed to do in cases of default. And most importantly, there's a provision that states ACT is to hold all funds collected in trust for Natty Mac. This unambiguous document clearly spells out that ACT is acting on Natty Mac's behalf with regard to this debt.
All right. Assuming that's all true, is there still an issue that the satisfaction should have been signed by the person who signed it in a different capacity, and that that did not match what was stated in the original mortgage, and that the closing agent accepted the satisfaction even though it was signed by a person in a different capacity or on behalf of ACT instead of Merck or Mears?
I would disagree that there's an issue of material fact, whether that creates an issue of material fact as to whether ACT was an agent for Natty Mac. As to whether there's an issue of fact on negligence, we would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. As we noted in the Mabe versus Ackerman case, a case that does post-date the 1939 statute. In that case, very similar situation occurred. Payment was made to a servicer, or to a third party acting on behalf of the lender. And in that case, the individual who signed the satisfaction was authorized to satisfy the mortgage, in that case a deed of trust under Minnesota law, but failed to sign in his representative capacity, failed to say, I did this as trustee. He just signed his own name. And what the Minnesota court said was, that didn't cause any harm to the original lender. And the reason is, nobody was deceived by the fact that the satisfaction on the public record didn't match up because the parties that were at issue weren't third parties that those recording statutes are intended to protect. Natty Mac talked today about preserving the integrity of that system. If this were a case where Natty Mac had perhaps gone on and sold this obligation to some third party that somehow believed that this mortgage was still in effect, perhaps we'd have a different case, but that's not the case we have here today. Here we have Natty Mac, the party that knew everything about this relationship, Natty Mac, the party that designated ACT and told ACT to register in the MERS system. Natty Mac, the party that was calling the shots, essentially knew about this mortgage that was out there and knew the status. And so, coming back around, the fact that the mortgage was the mortgage satisfaction was executed by Mr. Hawes in its capacity as part of ACT as opposed to MERS, didn't cause any harm to Natty Mac in this case, because the funds had still already been distributed. It was a matter of whether or not the satisfaction met the requirements of the statute. There's been some concern stated about the cases and the age of the authorities that were provided to the court for the proposition that paying the underlying debt satisfies the mortgage as a matter of law. There are other authorities as well under these similar circumstances. One is Scott versus Bank of American Illinois. That's 468 Southeast 2nd, 359 at 361. That's from Georgia in 1996. That's a case where there was a payment made to an authorized loan servicer. In that case, the court said the payment was made to the loan servicer. That party was authorized to receive payment. That's the end of the story as far as whether or not the mortgage has been satisfied or not. Whether or not the funds eventually got to the right party between the lender and its agent isn't the fault of the party that paid. Another case holding to the same effect is Rockford Life Insurance Company v. Rios, 261 Northeast 2nd 530. That's an Illinois Appeals Court case from 1970. Court reached the same determination there. In that case, the court specifically said, if payment is made to an authorized agent, as in the case of Barr, the payer is not bound to inquire into the application of such payment. The default of such agent is the responsibility of the principal. And in this case, that's Natty Mac. It's the principal who, in the first instance, selects the agent, grants him the authority, and enables him to come in the possession of the funds which are diverted. It's this conduct that makes the loss possible. And the principal may not shift the burden to the party dealing with the agent. And that's what Natty Mac is asking this court to do today. Natty Mac chose its agent. Natty Mac is the party that decided ACT would handle its loan servicing. Natty Mac's the party that entered into agreement telling ACT, you've got to designate yourself as the recipient of these funds in the MERS system. And what's more, Natty Mac knew, based upon the documents in its possession about the MERS system, that individuals would be calling in to MERS and requesting information about payoff. And they knew that the MERS system would give them the number for ACT. And those same documents informed Natty Mac. When parties call in, they're going to call ACT, ask for payoff information, and direct the payment to ACT. Natty Mac had notice of all of these things. And so
I assume that when ACT absconded, if I have the right party right, that this was a national organization and that other people were in the same boat. Are there any other cases out there that have a similar fact situation as we have here? ACT takes the money, they disappear, and Natty Mac says, we never got our money.
Are you talking about specifically these parties or just this type of relationship?
Well, you've talked to us about the case out of Georgia, which you say is similar, but if this happened on a national scale, are there any other cases out there that have been reported by other courts dealing with these parties in this type of effect situation, or is this unique?
We've done a fair amount of research on cases involving the MERS system, and the cases that have turned up haven't involved this factual scenario. Right. Those cases have involved standing to enforce mortgages and things of that nature.
Well, Mr. Moorhead, what about the obligation, the underlying debt, the note? Has the note been canceled? Has it been noted as canceled, returned to anyone? Where's the note?
I don't believe the record reflects where the note is.
That's the obligation, isn't it not? The mortgage is just notice to the world, but the obligation is the note.
The obligation is the note, but the case law is pretty clear that payment of the obligation discharges the mortgage. Payment of the obligation discharges both.
But it's still a negotiable instrument out there somewhere, correct?
There isn't any evidence in the record that reflects that in either matter. Turning to the issue of negligence in this case, Your Honor. South Dakota case law that we've cited for the court states that an escrow owes a duty to the parties to the escrow agreement and to follow the escrow agreement. And that's what Getty Abstract did here. More importantly, Natty Mac, the party seeking relief, wasn't a party to the escrow agreement. In the cases we cited, note that, generally speaking, there isn't a duty to strangers to that escrow agreement.
Are they really a stranger, though? I mean, it to me, it's a little scary to maybe write an opinion saying that a mortgagee or that a lender who buys a mortgage isn't a party in a loan closing. That's kind of a scary proposition.
The reason for the distinction is laid out in the Summit Financial Holdings case. The reason there's a problem with trying to hold that there's some obligation between an escrow and a third party like Natty Mac is there's already this fiduciary duty on the other side. Getty Abstract already has a duty to the PESIC, First Dakota National Bank, to follow their instructions. The Summit Financial Court noted that what you'll essentially do is create a competing set of obligations for a party that's essentially given an agreement that they've signed, and they've got to follow those instructions that they're given. It creates an untenable situation where the escrow is kind of put between two masters, so to speak, when their real obligation is the people who engage them, which in this case is the PESICs and First Dakota. And for that reason, the Summit Financial Court, also Black versus Metro in Wisconsin, those courts have generally said, generally there's no duty. Now, when I say no duty, to address your concern, Judge Zinner, the cases also say you can't go out and defraud these third parties. You can't go out and self-deal if you're in escrow. And so there's certainly those protections. But in terms of policing the relationship between a lending servicer and the lender who engaged that servicer to act on their behalf, the courts have said that's not the obligation of the party paying the money. Now, Getty has tried to distinguish, Natty Mac has tried to distinguish the cases that we've cited on this point, pointing out they're from other jurisdictions with regard to this duty issue, pointing out that they're not South Dakota cases. But tellingly, Natty Mac hasn't cited a single authority standing for the proposition that a party like Getty needs to police that relationship between ACT and Natty Mac. Instead, what the cases have said, and in this case we've heard a lot about the primary bad actor, ACT, what the cases have said, such as Scott versus Bank of America, is where one of two innocent parties must suffer from the wrongful act of another, the loss should fall upon the one who by his conduct created the circumstances which enabled the third party to perpetrate the wrong. That's Scott v. Bank of America, 468 Southeast 2nd 359. And that's a case involving facts similar to this, a case where payment was made to a loan servicer authorized to receive payment, and the money never got there. But the court said, we're not going to put the onus on the party that paid and by payment discharged the mortgage. We're going to put the onus on the party who engaged the bad actor, the party who had the ability on the front end and throughout the relationship to police that relationship and make sure that things were being done properly. And all this brings it back to the beginning, Your Honor. This case is about who had the power and who made the rules. Natty Mac is the party that designated ACT as the loan servicer on the underlying debt in this case. There's no dispute that ACT had the power and the right to take that payment and accept that payment on Natty Mac's behalf. And as a matter of law, that discharged the mortgage, securing that obligation. Natty Mac was the party that required ACT to register with MERS. Natty Mac chose MERS as the system and its practices. It's undisputed ACT was the right party to pay. And if ACT failed to remit that payment to Natty Mac, the onus should fall on the party that made the decision to engage ACT in the first place. The cause of Natty Mac's loss wasn't whether or not a piece of paper was signed properly. The cause of Natty Mac's loss is that it trusted an agent it shouldn't have, ACT.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Moorhead. Mr. Tobin, you have 10 minutes, sir.
May it please the court.
Mr. Tobin, let me ask you right away about the last point that was suggested about causation. You know, if we were to rule against you on the satisfaction of mortgage question, whether that has any effect in this case, what about your negligence claim? You know, if the mortgage was satisfied by operation of law, do you have any claim there? Is there any causal damages that have been suffered if it doesn't make a difference whether this statute was followed?
Your Honor, I think we would still have a damage claim.
Against Getty.
Correct. I mean, we could not obviously go against the P6 or the bank. That would be taken care of in the hypothetical decision that Your Honor indicated. But I do think we would have a claim against Getty to discuss the duty they owed and whether that duty was breached by their transaction, by them treating ACT as if they were the mortgagee of record.
I'm not talking about duty now. I'm talking about causation. If, in fact, the mortgage was effectively satisfied, do you have any causally related damages that Getty caused by accepting a mortgage that didn't make any difference? I mean a satisfaction, I'm sorry.
If this court were to declare that the satisfaction... Strike that, that's not what you were indicating. If this court were to declare that the mortgage has been satisfied or otherwise discharged, would we have any other...
causally related damages that were caused by Getty?
I believe we would, but I want to take that conversation back to the duty and their breach.
Well, I want to go to causation, not duty.
I still think that they caused damage. I don't think the fact that this court judicially declares 2 or 3 years after the fact that the underlying obligation has been discharged, I don't know if that lets Getty off the hook way back when. They should be.
But you've conceded that Getty, or that the payment was made to the right party. So Getty can't be liable for that. Because you've conceded that ACT had the authority to accept the payment. So obviously Getty can't be liable for negligence there.
Fair.
So let's go to the question of accepting the satisfaction. What causally related damages would relate if it didn't make any difference?
Well, again, I mean, I certainly see Your Honor's point. I guess I would be troubled that they could be, let off the hook by this court's decision 3 years later. I think that my client is the one who is out the $100,000 right now, and I think it should be up to a jury to determine, was it foreseeable to Getty? Did they breach a duty owed by accepting that satisfaction and then putting us into the pickle, contributing to putting us in the pickle that we are in today? But I would certainly concede, Your Honor, that the available theories to us and the arguments we would have would certainly be curtailed if this court were to determine that the underlying obligation has in fact been discharged.
All right. Oh, Mr. Tobin, again, has the note been satisfied?
Your Honor, I don't know if this is in the record or not, but I can tell you as an officer of the court that no, it has not. My client, Natty Mack, has physical possession of the original note. It has not been stamped, paid in full. It has not been stamped, satisfied. It has not been returned to the Pessex or to their lender. It still is in existence in the marketplace, so to speak.
You know, if I remember correctly, there was an equitable claim floating around in this lawsuit for a while to force your client to get a satisfaction filed. And I've forgotten what happened to that.
As I understand it, Your Honor, the defendants on their third-party claim against MERS was asking the court to force MERS to file and sign a satisfaction. I would say, obviously acknowledging the fair point, that MERS is, in fact, the mortgagee of record. Nothing happened or became of that, and I don't know if that was simply because the circuit court determined that our claims were out. I don't think it does, because as the record currently stands, the mortgage note is still out on the marketplace, and on the record with the Register of Deeds office, I believe you've got a troublesome inconsistency of a satisfaction that purports to satisfy a mortgage when they're signed by different parties. But the equitable portion of that, there's nothing in Judge Teedy's order requiring MERS or, in fact, my client to do.
That was in the third party action or something?
I believe so. Okay. As I stand here, Your Honor, I don't believe there was a counterclaim back against my client asking that the court order my client to do anything. And Justice Hinter, I'd also like to follow up on your comment, and I share your thought that it would be scary for this court to enter a decision saying that only the actual parties to the closing have any right of recourse against the closing agent. To me, that just ignores the well-accepted fact that it's the lenders and the funders and the banks. They probably have a greater interest in what happens in that closing and that it's done right than the actual home buyer and home seller who are there. It's the money that is of importance, and it's those banks that are paying and receiving it. And to restrict right of recourse against a closing agent to just those two entities, I think would be very, very problematic. By analogy, and we do this in our brief, allowing people not connected to the transaction to bring suit is nothing new. We argue by analogy the issues of legal malpractice and trust and will beneficiaries potentially having a cause of action against an attorney, even though they weren't the client, they weren't a part of that transaction. And I think that makes sense under this court's jurisprudence and case law of the foreseeability of harm. That's what gives rise to duty in those cases. Is it foreseeable to a closing agent that if they don't do something right, they don't follow the law, is it foreseeable that there's going to be harm caused beyond to just the two people right there?
You know, but on the other hand, for instance, in this case, if Getty had just pocketed the money themselves and not satisfied the mortgage and taken off, would Dunny Mac have a claim against Getty? No, they still have their mortgage. In that situation, I don't see a duty right off hand anyway, because they'd still have their mortgage. They'd say, we don't care what you did. We've got our mortgage.
And I think that same issue would maybe even still apply here. Whether there's a duty to Natty Mac or not, I think it is important, but I think in practicalities, for example, in this case, if the mortgage is determined to still be in effect, well, I would contend that the Pessics have an immediate claim against other entities. So this whole duty in getting at the closing agent may be triggered in different fashions, but I ultimately think that the closing agent cannot insulate themselves from scrutiny or liability.
But you just said Pessics had the right to enforce the duty, not your client under that hypothetical.
Correct. And I think the Pessics certainly do, because under your hypothetical, to me, the mortgage remained valid. And here, if the mortgage remains valid, I don't know necessarily think my client has to be the one to go after the closing agent anymore. I think the Pessics will have to do that on their own. We would certainly champion those efforts for them. But if the mortgage remains valid, then I believe, yes, the Pessics or any aggrieved member of that closing would have a right of action against the closing agent and potentially others. Your Honors, as I indicated in my initial remarks, from the Pessics perspective, and maybe even from other perspectives, the facts of this case can leave a bad taste in the mouth. But I would respectfully urge this court not to let some troubling bad facts possibly create confusion and lack of certainty in the title recordation system. The statute, we believe, is very clear, SDCL 44814. The satisfaction must be filed, and even more importantly, I would submit, it has to be signed by the mortgagee of record. I believe the analysis can stop right there. Those statutes were not complied with. The legislature spoke clearly, and under this court's statutory construction, it should just simply enforce what the legislature requires. So we request that this court reverse the trial court's decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tobin. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.